This is our grain mill, and it's actually, the name is a pun, it's called the cereal killer. And that's what we used to crush all
This is Mandy Neglich. She's a friend of mine and a coworker at WNYC. She's in the marketing department. And in her spare time, she's a champion home brewer. One of her beers won first in the country at the National Home Brewing Competition.
Yeah, so this is Two Row, which is the base for an IPA, which is what I'm about to make.
Mandy doesn't fit the typical profile of a high-level home brewer. For one thing, her home is the tiny Manhattan one-bedroom apartment that she shares with her boyfriend. So their brewing operation has completely taken over the place. On the kitchen counter, they have sacks of grains as big as pillows.
And then we also have flaked wheat, 5 pounds of that, and that's, again,
in containers on the stove.
Gypsum, Epsom salts, calcium chloride.
On the windowsill.
Oh, this is a hacked mini fridge. This is what we ferment in. I had to bang the inside of it out with a hammer.
Then you walk down the narrow hallway and open the closet, and
this is an old ice cream fridge that we hacked, and it's now a four-tap kegerator.
So you've converted your closet.
I know,
this is supposed to be a coat closet, and you've turned it into an ice cream fridge with four taps that you can have four beers on tap.
Exactly. We measured the closet before we picked this apartment to make sure we could fit all this in here.
You must not have a hard time making friends. Another way that Mandy isn't a typical home brewer, she's a she. Coming up, Mandy and I will nerd out on beer, and then she'll talk about some of the reactions she gets from the dudes of the beer world.
Oh, this is pretty advanced. You know, do you know this is actually a different kind of malt? And I was like, oh, actually, I really know what I'm doing.
Then later in the show, in an interview taped live on stage, I'll ask the women behind the Austin-based blog Bitch Beer about taking back the term bitch beer. And they'll help me pair beers with weather forecasts.
I'm going to be a little uncouth, and I'm going to go with a porter as well, but I'm just going to add cold brew on top of it. Do like a beer cocktail.
Do you pour cold brew coffee into your beer?
I do.
Gasps from the audience.
That's all coming up. Stick around. From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. Mandy is 25. She and her boyfriend moved to New York about a year ago from Texas. They both went to Texas Christian University in Fort Worth. They were into beer and home brewing before, but it's only in the past year that they started entering competitions. And they get a system. Each week in their apartment, they brew a different batch. One week, Mandy buys all the ingredients and makes one of her recipes. The next week, it's her boyfriend Wes's turn to take the lead. And you might have one of those fun home brewing kits, but to get to the level Mandy's at, you gotta be pretty hardcore. She's got about $5,000 worth of equipment in her apartment. When you talk to her about her process, even questions that seem simple turn out to be complicated. From the time that you do that very first step, the yeast.
Yes.
To the time that you're drinking the beer, how long is that?
I mean, that really depends on your fermentation and what yeast you're using, too. If you're using like a cow,
I asked Mandy to run through the most basic bullet points of the brewing process. And pretty soon we were here.
First, you're going to dough in. And that's any beer you're going to dough in. That's just really getting the grains wet. Again, getting them warm. Like around beer you're doing. I'm doing a two-step mash on this IPA just because I want it to dry out.
And mash.
So I'm mashing higher depending on how long you want your sugar chains to be. Depending.
Or you can have it rest so that enzymes can chew through some proteins, especially if you're using like a lot of wheat.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got to slow it down for me, Mandy.
Yes. Yeah.
So with apologies to Mandy, here are the most basic bullet points of the brewing process. You start off with malted barley, and you soak it in hot water to release malt sugars. The malt sugar solution is then boiled with hops for seasoning. And then that solution is called wort, W-O-R-T. The wort is cooled, and then you add in the yeast to begin fermentation. That's where the real magic happens. The yeast ferments the sugars, releasing CO2 and ethyl alcohol. So that's where you get your carbonation and the stuff in the beer that makes you feel so happy, or sad, as the case may be. Of course, there are a million ways to tweak the process, and Mandy's tested a lot of them. When we were done talking shop, it was time to drink. Mandy had a Belgian-style triple and a stout on tap, and there was a Weissenbach in bottles.
Yeah, totally.
I went for the stout.
It was made with coconut and vanilla, and we've done it with bourbon before, but we didn't this time.
Interesting.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, it's really good.
Yeah, so it like has those chocolatey flavors from the malt, and then there's that coconut. It's a little more subtle now. We've had it on tap for like 2 months.
Oh man, that's really good. Like, it's got so much flavor.
Yeah.
It's so rich. When you go through this whole process, now you've been through it a bunch of times, and it's like several weeks leading up to cracking open a new batch. Uh-huh. Like, when you take that first sip of a new batch, how does that feel?
It's really nerve-wracking, actually, because you're like, please let everything have turned out the way I'm expecting. Like, yes, I can't wait to try it. And then you're like, oh, it's just not quite right. And now I have 2.5 gallons to drink of it. I mean, it still tastes great, but, you know, you're really, especially at the level I'm at now where I've done it several times, I really want my experiments to pay off. But it's exciting. It's more fun to crack it with a friend because they're always enjoying it, whereas I'm like, oh, like this flavor is a little off, or, oh, the aroma is not what I want. I should have dry hopped it longer. So,
but when you take a sip of a new batch and it's like really what you were like, you feel like you nailed it. Like, what does that feel like?
It feels awesome. And I want to share it always. So, yeah. Or save it for competition if it's really awesome. Then I'm like, nobody gets this until after NHC.
Speaking of competition, so I see also here in your apartment, you have a bunch of ribbons on the fridge. You got American Homebrewers Association National Homebrew Competition.
Yeah, we got a couple going here. We have, these are regional ribbons.
When Mandy talks about these medals, here she says, we won this one, we won that one. Because that's how she thinks of it. She and her boyfriend are kind of like a team. They help each other out, give each other feedback. But when it comes to competitions, they each enter their own recipes separately. So even though Mandy says we, technically, they're actually competing against each other. And the biggest medal on the fridge has Mandy's name on it. First in the country in Belgian and French ales at the National Homebrewing Competition. It was the first competition Mandy ever entered. And not everyone she beat out was so gracious.
I mean, I definitely got comments. Like, someone made a joke, and they're like, oh, it must have been your boyfriend that wrote the recipe. Which is like, okay, you know, just one. Let me bask in this for a minute. but there was comments like that. I mean, there's also just jokes like, oh, you're the hottest person to win this year. I was also the only female who won gold. And I mean, we'd all been drinking the whole night of the award ceremony, right? They give you free beer at the award ceremony.
You're saying there's a lot of drinking at the homebrewing championships?
There's a lot of drinking.
Okay. Did you feel like some of them resented you?
I did have one weird moment. After the award ceremony, after the after party, like when we were all just hanging out and talking about our awards, where they were asking me about my recipe, and it wasn't like, oh, you know, why did you do this? It was, tell me what temperature you did this. Tell me what ingredient, why did you do that? Oh, you did this? It felt like a little, like they were trying to catch me off guard. Like
an interrogation.
Yeah, a little bit.
They wanted to see if you really knew your stuff.
And that was after my boyfriend had gone home to the hotel, too. You know, it went from kind of being like, we're all hanging out and doing our thing to like a little bit of an intense moment that I definitely didn't appreciate.
Has your boyfriend been around any of the times that people have sort of been questioning?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we get the joke all the time.
And what's his, how does he react?
He really gets a lot of comments actually when we go out to dinner. If I'll go to the bathroom, the waiter will be like, wow, she really knows how to order her beer. Or I wish I had a girl who knew how to drink like that and that kind of stuff. He catches that a lot. And I think that's so funny, actually. We'll be out and I'll order something from the bartender and they'll say, oh, that's pretty intense. Are you sure? Do you want to taste her first? And sometimes I'm like, no, I definitely want it. It's a sour beer. I love sour beer. They'll still bring me a taste for me. Like, I just want to make sure. You know, and I guess they probably have had that experience of people not liking the beer, so I get it.
Any people?
I feel like, yeah, I do feel like I get it more because I'm a woman. He doesn't usually get that question.
Do you ever say anything?
You know, no. The one time I've said something actually was in a homebrew shop when we were buying ingredients, and a worker who I think probably had the best intentions came over and was like, oh, this is pretty advanced. You know, do you know this is actually a different kind of malt?
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, actually, I really know what I'm doing. And like, I'm good.
That's Mandy Neglitch. While being a woman in the world of beer does make you a minority, things are changing. Nowadays, about 20% of all the breweries in America have at least one female founder. Which sort of means things are coming full circle because women were the original brewers. In ancient Egypt, women made and sold almost all the beer. In colonial America, same thing, women were the primary brewers. Jane Austen brewed beer when she wasn't writing Pride and Prejudice. The whole thing wasn't dominated by men until the Industrial Revolution, when guys realized they could make a lot of money off it, kicked all the women out. These days, women aren't just making more beer, they're also drinking more, especially the craft varieties. Women only drink about 25% of all the beer in America, but they drink nearly 40% of the craft beer. With that shift, the big beer guys are getting nervous. And they should be, especially with women like Mandy out there. I mean, how can you compete with something as badass as a hacked ice cream fridge turned four-tap kegerator in a coat closet? Answer, you can't. Coming up, I'll talk with two of the women behind the Austin-based blog Bitch Beer. I'll ask them to pair beers with weather forecasts, and it'll get a little heated when we debate bottles versus cans. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Next week on the show, I'm going to talk all things ravioli with humorist Mo Rocca. We'll discuss round versus square ravioli.
You date round ravioli, you marry square ravioli.
Okay. And Mo will correct my grammar.
I think the singular might be raviolo.
That's next week. Get psyched for that one. Now, back to the task at hand. You know, friends, I believe that to every beer, there is a season. But to pair the beer with the season, sometimes we need help. I talked to Caroline Wallace and Sarah Wood, co-founders of the Austin-based blog Bitch Beer, live on stage at South by Southwest. So I thought it would not be right for me to interview you without beer.
Woo! We are fans of that.
So I brought some beer.
We're gonna clap for that this time.
I got Shinerbach, is that all right? All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Are these twist-offs? Oh, thank goodness. All right.
Thank you.
Here you go.
Thank you.
Sarah?
Cheers.
Cheers. Man, that just hits the spot. You know what I love about Shinerbach is this, I feel like it's one of the few beers that is kind of bitter and has a lot of flavor and it's dark and kind of robust, but it's still such a great hot weather, daytime beer.
Totally.
Am I right?
Yeah, we have a lot of beers like that down here in Austin. Out of necessity, obviously.
Right.
You have to come prepared.
Yeah.
Now, before I get accused of being horribly sexist, can you please explain the derivation of the name of your website, Bitch Beer?
Yeah, we actually started this blog when we were pretty fresh out of college, actually. And so Bitch Beer was a term we heard a lot down here for kind of that beer we get for the girls at the party, because they're not going to drink real beer. So a wine cooler, a malt beverage, or, you know, something lighter and fruitier. So we liked the idea because we Sarah and I and five other women, so a group of seven women writing about craft beer, of kind of putting a little tongue-in-cheek play on that term and making it about great artisan craft beer.
We're taking it back.
All right. I wanted to talk to you guys about the connection between beer and weather. Because to me, like, there's so many kinds of beer out there, and the kind of beer I want, almost, I would say 80% depends on what the weather is. The other 20% depends on whether or not I've done any manual labor in the previous, like, 2 hours. So I'm going to say a type of weather, and I want you to tell me what you think is the perfect type of beer you want in this weather. Ready?
Ready.
Sunny and 80 degrees.
Berliner Weiss.
Caroline?
I'm going to go like a session IPA, something hoppy, but not super high alcohol and refreshing.
Yeah. For me, sunny and 80 degrees, I wrote down Bud Light in a can. Is that also an option?
Well, I mean, it is an option.
I'm a big believer that there is a time and place for every beer. Like, I don't care how crappy you might consider a certain beer to be, there is a time and place for it.
Yeah, like when it's free.
Yeah.
All right, now this one's a tough one. I don't know how often you see this weather in Austin. Sunny and 35 degrees.
Ooh.
And cold. You've been outside. You've been outside and you just came in from being out in the cold. Mm-hmm. Maybe you were on a nice hike, a walk in the woods. And you come back inside, and you feel that first rush of the warm air. Take off your jacket.
I think
I'm still sitting in the seat.
Sorry.
I'm kidding. Go on.
So many details.
Yeah.
I think for me, at 35 degrees, sunny doesn't matter at all. It's 35 degrees. Yeah. That's cold.
Right.
So I'm going to go like a big barrel-aged imperial stout or something high alcohol, stick to your ribs, like that you can, a sipper.
I'm going to go Belgian. In this scene that you're painting, there's like a roast in the oven and my dog's tail is just wagging out of control. And I want a triple or a quad, something big and fruity and estuary and robust to warm me back up from my hike.
I would go nice IPA.
Okay.
In this kind of weather. Mm-hmm. But those are good, yours are good suggestions too.
Wait, is it an IPA in a can?
Yeah.
Bottle.
Whoa.
You know, when you've been out in the cold, you want to class it up a little. Yeah. Breezy, clouds giving way to sun. High of 66. But it's 11 a.m., so it's not sunny yet, but it will be.
I'm going to go coffee porter.
Whoa.
By virtue of 11 a.m.
Snap.
Yeah.
Sarah.
I'm going to be a little uncouth, and I'm going to go with a porter as well, but I'm just going to add cold brew on top of it.
Ah.
Do a mixed drink, like a beer cocktail.
You pour cold brew coffee into your beer?
I do.
Gasps. Whoa. From the audience.
That is huge. That is a huge breakthrough in society, because often one of my issues is I consume a lot of caffeine. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I want beer, but I'm also feeling a little tired. Sometimes beer will give you temporary energy, but it can be short-lived. Caffeinated beer.
It's a
total
game changer. It's a game changer. It's revolutionized my life.
Wow. Wow. All right. At what point do we not need any more kinds of beer in the world?
Yeah, there's a lot of dialogue about that right now, because there are actually at this time in the U.S. the most breweries that there have been since before Prohibition. Mm-hmm. So prior to Prohibition, it was like every little part of a town would have kind of their on their block a little tiny microbrewery, and that supplied beer for maybe 50, 100 people. And so there were thousands in the U.S. because of that. But after Prohibition and kind of the industrialization of the beer industry, that number really, really fell. And we're with this kind of craft beer, micro beer explosion kind of back for the first time since then to this amount of breweries. So people talk about that a lot, but I think that the key probably is in finding a balance between this and that original thing. So maybe more breweries, there's room for more breweries, but maybe their growth plan isn't to become the next Sam Adams or New Belgium. You have to focus on being a restaurant that makes really great beer. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you distribute your beer just to the city of Austin or just in your city. But not everyone's going to be the next Sam Adams.
All right, you guys ready for the lightning round?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about beer vessels and beer serving.
Okay.
Frosted mugs. What's your take?
No.
Get out of here.
No, thank you.
Agreed. Frosted mugs are the worst because they make the beer too cold. You lose your bubbles, you lose your flavor, you lose your aroma.
Yeah.
Bottles or cans?
Either in a glass, typically. Going to drink straight out of it. Either one works, but I kind of go for a can a little bit more.
I'm a can man. I like the mouthfeel of the can. I like the way it feels on my mouth. I like that I don't need to worry about dropping it. I also feel like because the bottle is taller, it's more vertical. Mm-hmm. Each time you tilt the bottle back to drink from it, the beer has farther to travel before it gets to your mouth. Mm-hmm. And over the course of drinking the beer, that gins up a lot of fizz. And I think that as a result, the natural motion of tilting back a bottle to your mouth stirs up the beer more and makes it a little bit too carbonated. Whereas with a can, because it's more short and squat, the beer travels a shorter distance and therefore is not so fizzy when it gets to your mouth.
I have never considered this before. I was like, pull it together, mind blown, but pull it together.
This is a revolution.
If you go to places on like Bourbon Street or probably some spots on 6th Street here in Austin, you'll see some bars that serve beer in like ridiculous vessels of all kinds, giant test tubes or plastic guitars or God knows what. Are any of these redeemable? Like, is there ever a reason why one of these crazy vessels is better than a good old-fashioned glass?
I would say probably not to drink at a place that did most of those things, but I do like the idea of that beer helmet thing, because I've never worn one before.
Thank you, yes.
I wore one recently. They're incredibly difficult to talk about fizzing up your beer.
Okay, but really? The hard hat with the toucan holders and the straws that come down?
That seems cool.
I've always wanted one of those. Sarah, was that everything I dreamed it would be?
It was a dream come true.
Wow. All right, well, Caroline Wallace and Sarah Wood are the co-founders of the beer blog Bitch Beer and co-authors of Austin Beer, Capital City History on Tap. Check them out at bitchbeer.org. Big hand for Caroline and Sarah. Couple more quick notes. If you're a woman who loves craft beer, there are some great groups out there that plan meetups and tastings that you gotta check out. There's one called Girls Pint Out and another called Barley's Angels. They both have chapters all over the place. And if you're a woman who works in the beer world in any capacity, check out a networking group called the Pink Boots Society. Before we go, I want to share a quick podcast recommendation. You guys know I love the podcast The Longest Shortest Time. It's a parenting podcast for everyone. You've probably even heard the host, my friend Hillary Frank, right here on The Sporkful. Well, right now they have a great episode up about a 12-year-old who makes a mean beef Wellington. He says he got into cooking when he was 8, when he was tired of being an inventor. You know, because that happens. You got to check out this episode. This kid is amazing. It's called The True History of a Child Chef and His Mom. Get The Longest Shortest Time today, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll also share the link through social media and on our website. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Editing help from Shoshana Gold. Engineering help from Chase Culpin. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Laura Lynn Hildebrand from Winnipeg, Canada.
And I'm Preston in San Jose, California.
And I'm Noni from New York City, reminding you to eat more.
Eat better.
And eat more better.